Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Enrico Belmonte.
Hey, Enrico. Good talking to you again. Hey, I know that you work in a company with the design teams, right? You do training and do a bunch of other stuff with them on reliability with them. And one of the things I ran into a couple of days ago, it came through my email as a blog post, and it was basically the idea that it's whatever we were working on is not going to work the first time. And the title of it was Assume Bugs.
Yeah.
And it made me think of all the people I've talked. There was one team I ran into as a supplier that the company I was working for was having trouble with. And I called them and I got the general manager, and he goes, I was asking about their reliability program. He goes, oh, we don't need any of that. I just hire good engineers and nothing ever fails. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. I don't agree with that assumption, but and I'm calling you because it's not working. But it was a very short conversation. They were not interested at all in paying attention to quality or reliability because they just assumed it was going to be good.
Yeah, that would be the great, the final stage, you know, of reliability engineer, where you don't need to hire any reliability engineer anymore because reliability is so embedded in everybody that you don't need any expert. So, but that's a utopia, right? We have experience that is not the common scenario.
It's not common. No, it does happen, and it takes energy to keep it going. And it's not like you get to the top of the mountain, now you can walk back down. No, you need to maintain that pattern or that culture. Yet it's I think the very first step is that in what the article what he was talking about was that, you know, it's an iterative process. You know, we have an idea or a goal or an objective of what we're trying to create or design or build or offer on the market. And then we figure out how to get there. And the very first prototype is fragile. It may not have all the functions. It may or may not work. Yet the idea is you make the prototype so you can find out what needs improvement. And it's, when you don't have that culture, it's like, all right, Enrico, you got 1 month to design this, you know, new feature for this product, and then we'll put it in the product and ship it. And because I know you're a good designer, it'll just work. Yeah. Is a dangerous assumption, I think. Not that you're not a good engineer. It's that there's too many variables for any one team to sort out and get right the very first time.
Yeah, so I agree with that. And in the company I was at, but also in the current one, you have different stage of the different sample stage, you know. Mm-hmm. And for each sample stage, engineers need to accomplish, say, different tasks. For example, you know, if you have you are in the early phase of development, reliability should be at least demonstrated to a certain amount, a certain value, right? Mm-hmm. And the point is, but it's I really agree with the fundamental concept behind it. So when we design a new product, we start knowing about the product, and that's for me is the key issue, right? So you learn what are the potential damage mechanisms. You are able to start provoking them. You know, you can do multiple things in order to learn how the product behaves. And of course, you also, in a scientific approach, you know, you just ask some questions to the product, expecting some answers. So are you failing under fatigue loading, for example? No? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I test you, test the product. You is the product in this case, under cyclic load until it fails, and then I will see whether my expectations are met. Okay. But there are, as you said, a lot of things that we do not predict for multiple reasons, so combination of different damage mechanisms or failure modes or environmental effect that we have neglected before. So therefore, the development has some time, you know. And we can accelerate the development time through the support of simulation, support of virtual prototyping and so on, but we'll still need to learn a lot from the product, yeah, before going into mass production. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. It's the interrogation of the product and getting to know that product. It's like an entity in itself, and it's developing. And the term we use for that early stage of the life cycle of development or design and development is appropriate, because it's not like we go get everything final fit, form, and function and put it together, and then in end of the week we have a new product ready to ship. It does take time. And I think, like you said, is the interrogation's a great way to think of it. Is there's things that we can expect and we check, and then there's things we don't know about yet, and we're exploring for those. And I think that's a key point to keep an open mind, is not ignore anomalies or aberrations or failures that occur even early in the program, is because they're sending you a message saying, hey, this isn't quite ready yet. This might, and it may or may not be something we're going to address. Yet when you only have three prototypes, every single failure could represent a 30% field failure rate, because one of your three fails.
Yeah, I think interrogation is the right word. You know, we have plenty of tools for interrogating the products, like for example the HAL test, the HAALT test. You know, where you go, it's not proper reliability test. No, but you go up to the limit. No, so you are looking for the limits, so the temperature limits, for example, for a component. Yeah, and in this way, you also collect a lot of information that will be, of course, used also for the future generation in case of, say, the further development of the product. So the early phase of development is one of the most interesting, because you force the failure. You know, you force the failure, so you learn how the part can fail, what are the damage mechanisms, and you also you really want to know, to get to collect information. For example, for plastic components, one good thing to do in the early phase is to do a CT scan. You know, do a CT scan, so, and you map the voids, so their density, their location, their size, you know, and then you compare these voids with different sample stages.
Oh, that's an. I never have done that. It's you can actually, because molding a product or forming a polymer into a shape. Yeah. You're right. It is not always a uniform, you know, density and uniform structure inside of it. And there's all kinds of phenomena. I never thought of using a CT scan, because then you could. Yeah. Evaluate all that. That's clever. You have better lab than I ever had.
So I worked a lot on plastics in my previous experience. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of simulation, but I also I worked for the research center of Bosch, and that time there was, you know, the financial situation was really good, and I had, as PhD, I had the opportunity to work with really talented people from the lab. So CT scan, SEM microscope, you know, and right. we were spending days and weeks looking for damage mechanism and the voids and fracture surface and so on. And that is really, you know, in a period or in a time where everybody is looking at virtual competencies, for example, AI and so on, the knowledge of the damage mechanism, the physical, what physically is going on, you know, with infrared camera, with everything you have, mm-hmm. it's really giving you an information that cannot be replaced in any way by artificial intelligence, for example.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree with that. The idea is that one of the precepts I've kind of grown up with is that, and this comes from my HP days, is that, you know, they were using a software as an example. If we have 100 lines of code, there's going to be some percentage of bugs in it. And let's say 1% of the codes of line going to be faulty in some way or another. And we just need to go find them. And the idea is the same with mechanical systems. It's going to be the variation of these tolerances, and some percentage of them are just not going to work. And it's finding the ones that were, you know, the most severe, the ones that were going to affect field performance over time and stuff like that was what we're after. But it was, there is a set of problems in the design. And part of the development process is to find them and then not introduce new ones, you know, keep the marketing guys at bay, don't add new features in the last week kind of thing. But the idea was, is that they exist. And I think that's what rang true with this blog post I was looking at, is that assume that there's stuff wrong, assume bugs, assume that's there. And it's an assumption that we're talking about is that, yeah, you can learn a lot, but you first have to look. And you have to assume that there's something not right, and we will find it. And then you can take action to make it better. If we just say to the development team, they have no interrogation going on, no tools to find defects, no prototypes going on, all right, you need to make it better, they're going to look at you like, well, what better?
You know? And when you say, do it better, and you know, you don't have the tool. One important tool that I really love it is DRBFM. You know, design review based on failure mode. Yeah? And you know, this approach is nowadays is established approach in a lot of companies. The point is, you know, that a lot of companies use that like a confirmation of the goodness of the design, you know.
Right.
And they create this long Excel sheet where everything is included. Yeah. But if you do design review based on failure mode, looking at the part, that means to you go to the whiteboard, you draw the part, you know, you sketch the part, you identify what are the potential failure modes, what are the damage mechanisms, what can happen, you try to estimate some behavior just by, you know, by intuition, and then you ask for confirmation. That's a really powerful tool. And this is also the beauty in the engineering work, you know. So together in a small team to try to identify what are the potential failure modes, what can happen locally, you know. I have fun doing that. So these are technical review, you know. And these are definitely part of forcing the failure culture, you know. So because you get people from different backgrounds, and you interrogate the product, you try to sketch what's going on, different behavior, and so on. And that is really what is makes really a lot of fun when doing engineering. Yeah,
yeah. One more note on this is that it has to be okay to talk about failures.
Yeah.
I've run into engineering directors and project managers that don't tell me about problems. You know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they're going to exist whether you want to talk about them or not. And if you ignore it long enough, it's going to be really expensive to fix. So let's talk about it sooner than later. And yet some companies, some organizations just don't want to admit that failures can occur.
Yeah. It's like a relationship, you know. You have a relationship, you don't want to hear anything that's going, it's going wrong, it's not going as you expect, you know.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We plan for success, we don't plan for failure. Yeah. I think that's, it comes out of project management world. And I think most engineers chafe under it because we know that there's going to be an iteration. We have to learn, interrogate is the right word. We have to understand our product and listen to it and make adjustments and improvements. And if you short circuit that just so that you can meet some deadline, the issues that you were going to address are still going to exist. And I think teams, you know, then they go into panic mode, and then you have the heroes that work all weekend and solve problems and stuff like that. But it's not a sustainable process.
Yeah. Let me say something about managers or people, the leaders in the organization. Mm-hmm. To my opinion, they have to know everything about the product. This is quite, say, a hard opinion, because I know a lot of people will be against it, saying, hey, the manager should have a superficial, let's say, superficial understanding of the product. That, for my opinion, is not that. So if you are the example for the rest of the organization, if you want to lead really the organization, you have to know, you have to be knowledgeable about the product. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know. Do you agree with that? Or,
Definitely. Yeah. No, it's, okay. I know I've told the story before, but it's one of these things. I was the manufacturing engineer / reliability engineer for this program to make a new inkjet printer. It was a new family of inkjet printer that the team was working on. And I got invited to be a regular participant in the weekly staff meeting for the program. And so there's a project manager, and it's a big project, tens of millions of dollars being invested in this thing. And this is a long time ago. So that was a lot of money. And yeah. I mean, we had 50 engineers working on this project, and this guy is running that team. And then there was a mechanical engineer, a polymer engineer or manager, an electrical manager, a mechanical manager, a software manager, a marketing manager, and me. You know, a new hire, young engineer.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt out of my depth. It's like, these people all have 10, 15 years experience, and they're at minimum, and some a lot more, and they all have teams of people that are working for them. And why am I at this meeting? They're talking about budget and priorities and this, that, and the other thing. And I asked the program manager once, why am I in these meetings? He says, you're the only other person in the room that has to know everything.
Yeah, okay.
You know, is the way you phrase it, is that you work with marketing to understand the stresses and use conditions of the product. You work with software to make sure that they're evaluating and finding enough bugs quick enough. You work with mechanical to solve, you know, electrical problems, and vice versa, electrical to solve mechanical problems. You're the only other person in this room that is structured by design to work with all of these parts of the organization to make a successful product. And he said, besides me, you know as much about how this thing works as anybody.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, don't wonder I like this job so much. But then I relaxed, right?
Great story,
You know, but I relaxed then with, you know, just because I'm not a manager and don't have 10 people working for me, I still have an impact on this product.
Yeah.
All by my little self, you know, kind of thing. And I thought, well, it's important to know a lot about your product and understand that there are things that need to be improved, and to force those failures to the surface. And some of it is be prepared for it. I like the, you know, design by failure mode analysis type stuff, where you think, well, how could it fail? And then which ones actually manifest themselves. If you're not prepared to see it, sometimes they're really hard to see.
Yeah, but let's visualize it at least. Let's try to visualize, let's sketch it, you know. What do you mean by failure of due to fatigue? You know,
where would it show up? And that just prepares that group to see it when it occurs. Whereas if you assume it'll just be perfectly balanced and aligned and it'll never fail, then it's harder to see the anomalies when they signal themselves.
So I
think there's that culture of being willing to accept that failures will occur and that we need to learn from it, I think, is the underlying key message here is that, there's going to be problems. You need to deal with them in an open-minded, it's the natural part of the process. It's going to happen, and it's a good thing. Where the opposite just leads to a lot of firefighting at one stage or another, because those things are still going to show up.
Because, you know, if you don't know the product, what you do for reliability is basically success run test, you know?
Yeah.
And then you say, okay, don't know much about the program. I test it as it's expected to the conditions that are expected for this product. I estimate a number of cycles, and that's all. If everything is fine, it's fine.
And then we make sure we don't measure anything that could show a problem. I've run into that too.
But this is really a superficial approach, which, you know, it might work. Yeah. But if you are forced to do a cost out, for example, you know, and you reduce the thickness of a metal sheet or whatever, you know, and you don't know how far you are from the limit, you know, and that's and you know, sooner or later, you need to know your product if you want to do engineering.
No, totally agree. Well, it's one of these things that, you know, it's sparked from a blog post I have. I much prefer it when our listeners give us a comment or a question or stuff like that. And we're, you know, getting into the new year here, and I'm looking forward to what kind of comments and messages we get from our listeners. I know that over the last part of December, our traffic to the site and number of people listening decreases. There are a handful I heard that, you know, are traveling or taking some downtime and listening to binge listening to our episodes. There's so a few of you are trying really hard to keep us going or keep the downloads up. But and I'm seeing it in the metrics now as the year gets started, is that the listening is going up again. And so it's people are getting back to work as we're recording this in early January, and the commute time is happening, stuff like that. So, you know, as you're listening to these, you know, if jot down a question, send it over. If you have an idea or a suggestion for a future podcast, let us know. Those we really enjoy. But we certainly can get ideas all over the place that we really like hearing from you. And you can do that over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Enrico and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So there's plenty of ways to get in touch. We'll get an answer to you as best we can. And then we'll talk about it. And then oftentimes I find I got to come back to you again and say, hey, you know, we talked this over and here's some more ideas for you to consider. So hopefully it'll help you. And it gives us and our whole community a topic that is probably going to help somebody, and more than likely is going to. So with that, Enrico, let's go find something wrong with our systems today.
Thank you. Let's go.
All right. Talk to you later, Enrico.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the discussion. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.